This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
So my name is Trace Cantwell, and I'm here today with Jean-François Robitaille. He's a postdoc at University of Manchester, and he did his PhD in Université Laval. So what were you doing your PhD on then?
So the title of my PhD was the multiscale analysis of the dust emission in the galactic plane. I was working with mathematical tools to separate different kind of fluctuations in the dust emission in the galactic plane.
And so there's just a lot of dust floating about in the galaxy.
Yeah, there's a lot of dust, and dust is a really good tracer to the the entire amount of matter along the line of sight, because we think that is homogeneously mixed with the molecular gas and the atomic gas as well. So it's a good tracer to the entire amount of matter in the interstellar medium.
So it's a good way of effectively seeing what the galaxy really looks like, where everything is,
the distribution
of matter in the galaxy.
Yeah, exactly. So during my PhD, I used the map of the special telescope Herschel.
And are you working on the same stuff then here in Manchester, or...?
It's a bit different. So, in my position here, I'm still working with similar mathematical tools that we could discuss a bit more later. Now, they are applied on the magnetic field of the galactic plane. So I try to understand the structures in the magnetic field.
So is there a magnetic field distributed throughout the whole of the galaxy, or do you only get magnetic field in small areas of the galaxy?
So there's magnetic fields almost everywhere in the galaxy. So usually people tends to separate it in two different ways. So you have the regular magnetic field and the random magnetic field. So the regular one is at the large scales of the galaxies. So the scale of the galactic arm, for example.
So the spiral arm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So at that scale, we see that the magnetic fields follow the galactic arms. At smaller spatial scales, we see that the magnetic field is more random, and it's probably caused by turbulence and energy that is ejected by supernova and also massive stars, stellar winds.
So how do we actually see magnetic fields in the galaxy? Are we able to just point a telescope at the galaxy and see these, or?
Yeah, it would be really useful, but no, we cannot do that. So that's the main problem with the magnetic fields, that we cannot observe it directly. So we have to use tracers to do that. There's no perfect tracers, but we have many ways to see it.
What are some examples of these tracers?
We have, for example, if we want to look at the larger scales, what is the larger fluctuations in the galactic plane, we'll look at what we call the extragalactic sources. So we look at
these sources outside of our own galaxy, like other galaxies or
exactly.
Like that.
So it's usually emitted by AGN, so active galactic nucleus.
Ah, so supermassive black holes at the center.
Yeah, exactly. So they emit polarized light. Polarization, maybe the best comparison we can do is when you look at a 3D movie in IMAX. Usually they use glasses with two different filters. So back in the old days, it was the blue and the red filter. But now they use polarized filter on the glasses.
So this is why when you look at someone else wearing the glasses, one of the eyes is darkened out?
Yeah, exactly.
Because the light can't get through both.
Yeah, exactly. So the polarization of light measure is the quantification of the orientation of the electric wave in the electromagnetic emission.
So whether the emission is going up and down or left and right or...
Yeah, exactly.
Clockwise or anti-clockwise.
So there's a lot of polarized emission in the in space or in the universe. So the extragalactic sources by the AGN are polarized. So when we look at the extragalactic sources, which emit polarized, polarized emission, the light experience what we call the Faraday rotation. So the Faraday rotation is the rotation of the angle of the polarization vector, or the angle of the oscillations of light. That rotation is dependent of the magnetic field strength in the galaxy. Also, it's dependent of the density of thermal electron. So a lot of the part of the matter in the interstellar medium is a plasma, which is just matter that is ionized by the fields of radiation in interstellar medium. It's also dependent of the square of the wavelength of the emission.
Okay. So we can infer magnetic fields are there because we can see
the amount of radiation
rotating emission from extragalactic sources.
Exactly.
But this isn't the technique you use.
No, that's not the technique that I use. So one main problem with that technique is that we don't have enough sources to sample all the oscillations or all the differences in the magnetic fields in the galactic plane. One really good thing about this technique is that we can measure the entire effect because we use extragalactic sources. Mm-hmm. So we can see the effect of the entire galaxy because the light is coming from outside of the galaxy. Since we don't have enough sources, we cannot sample like the entire fluctuations of the galactic plane. There's other way to do that. We can also use pulsars, which are in our galaxies. Mm-hmm. In that way, we can infer some distances to the magnetic field fluctuation in our galaxy. Another way is to use the dust polarization as well. So we think that dust grains has an elongated shape. That shape is aligned with the magnetic field lines. So the emission, the infrared emission of the dust is also polarized because of that alignment with the magnetic field. So we can do that, but it's still not perfect because we trace the magnetic field where this matter. So if we really want to trace the magnetic field itself, the best way is probably with the diffuse polarized galactic emission.
And so what's diffuse polarized galactic emission then?
Okay. So the galaxy itself emitting the polarized emission. It's what we call the synchrotron emission. Mm-hmm. So it's when the free electrons that I mentioned before, the thermal electrons that come from the ionization of the matter in the interstellar medium. So those free electrons are captured or accelerated by the magnetic field lines, and then those electrons emit polarized emission. Mm-hmm. That emission is visible in the radio, so that's why we are using radio telescopes.
So which radio telescopes are you using then for your work?
So for my work, I don't observe personally for that, but I'm using surveys that look at the entire galaxy. The first survey that I used was the Canadian Galactic Plane Survey, which is a survey of the entire galactic plane. It was at 1.4 gigahertz. Now I'm using another one, which comes from Australia, the SPAS survey for the S-band polarization all sky survey. So for this one, it's really interesting because we not only have the galactic plane, but we have the entire sky. So we can compare the emission at higher galactic latitude and also the more random magnetic field in the galactic plane itself.
So what results have you seen then with your new mathematical techniques?
Okay, so with my technique, I focus mainly on the random part of the magnetic field. That's the random part is mainly affected by the turbulence. Turbulence has the ability to transfer the energy from larger scales to smaller scales. We think that the main energy sources, the large scales...
drivers for the turbulence.
Yeah, exactly, is probably the supernova in the galaxy.
So that would be large-scale turbulence then?
Yeah, but this large scale energy then cascade from larger scales to smaller scales. So that's why we see fluctuations and randomness in the interstellar medium. But it's not completely random. And with my technique, I try to separate structures that are random or maybe turbulent from structures that are not turbulent. And try to understand the link between many physical processes like massive stellar winds to determine what is that scale of ejection in the galaxy. And for that, I'm using mathematical tools which are called wavelets. So the main idea with wavelets is that the main goal is to separate the different scale, and the best comparison that we can do is with a piece of music. For example, if we want to look at the frequency content of a piece of music, we'll do the Fourier transform of it. And then we'll see the piece of music not as a function of time, but as a function of frequencies. And then we can tell, oh, there's that frequency or this frequency in the piece of music. The difference with the wavelets is that we can not only say that there's that frequency or that frequency, but we can also tell where the frequency was during the piece of music. Mm-hmm. Those frequencies, there's also partial frequencies in images, so we can decompose an image in different scales and different spatial frequencies, and for that, yeah, I'm using wavelets, and from that decomposition we can tell many things. So we can quantify the turbulent medium by saying if it's for example subsonic, supersonic, and stuff like that. We can also tell the scale of the injection of the energy. Unfortunately, it's really hard to tell the scale at which complete dissipation of the energy, because for the moment we don't have the resolution to do that.
So effectively, so when you look at an image initially, all these different spatial scales are superimposed, and it's impossible just looking at the image to disentangle these.
It's really hard to do.
So the usefulness of your method is that you can actually apply this, and it opens that up for you. You can then see the different.
Yeah, exactly. And it's something that we can do only recently, because before those surveys that I was mentioning, we didn't have enough larger scales, if you want. So we just looked at some places in our galaxy. Mm-hmm. So like a star formation region, or what is the magnetic field in a supernova region, mm-hmm. and things like that. But now with the surveys, we have access to the fluctuation in the entire galactic plane, or for the entire mm-hmm. galaxy. And then we have access to the larger scales. So now we can see and try to measure with this kind of tools, the wavelet transform or Fourier transform, try to see what is the connection between the different scales. Mm-hmm. In the turbulent medium.
And so you mentioned that at the moment telescopes aren't good enough to be able to see down to that the smallest scales.
Yeah.
Is there hope in the future that these might be accessible?
Yeah. there's hope. So there's a lot of development for the next generation of radio telescope, or the SKA. So I try to look at some numbers that are impressive, some stuff that
the SKA is the telescope being built in South Africa and Australia.
Yeah,
is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It will have a lot more telescope and more telescope, or the more, yeah, not just the sensitivity, but the number of antenna and the
baselines, the distance,
yeah,
between,
exactly,
the antenna.
Yeah, the baselines, longest baselines, we can have access to smaller features, if mm-hmm. you want, in the images, and reach a better resolution with our observation. So with that, yeah, maybe at that point we'll be able to look at the point where we have a dissipation of the energy in the and it's something that is really important to understand, for example, the formation of molecular clouds, mm-hmm. which are
the birthplace of new stars.
Of stars, yeah, exactly. So that will be very interesting. Also, SKA will be more sensitive, like you said. When I mentioned, for example, the extragalactic sources, so at the moment I said that we don't have enough sampling to look at the smallest fluctuation, so we have only access to the large scales mm-hmm. fluctuation, or the large scale image of the magnetic field in the galaxy with that technique.
So this is the Faraday rotation technique, using the extragalactic sources.
Extragalactic sources. Yeah. So now at the moment we have access to catalog of extragalactic sources of approximately 40,000 sources. But with the sensitivity of the SKA, we'll have like between 7 and 14 extragalactic sources.
Oh, million extragalactic sources.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a significant jump up.
Yeah, exactly. So with that, we will have a better sampling of the magnetic field mm-hmm. of the entire galaxy. There's some limitation with the, when we look at the diffuse polarized galactic emission, what mm-hmm. I'm doing. There's some advantage to use the extragalactic sources.
So we'll be able to do an awful lot more so once the SKA comes online. When is the SKA due to begin operation?
So I think the construction should begin around 2018.
Okay, so still a couple of years away.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, still there's a lot of work to do.
In the meantime,
yeah. And it's also the role of our group here in Manchester with an archive, so to imagine some new science that we'll be able to do with the SKA, and also developing the pipeline of reductions of data and things like that.
Sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for coming to talk to us today.
Thanks a lot to you.